Part 2. Operation Wild Rose. Chapter 11. Natal, South Africa. October 1988. To the casual eye, the great trunk of the dead baobab tree looked like one of a thousand others spread about the northeast coastal plain of Natal Province, South Africa. There was no way of telling why it had died or how long ago. It stood in a kind of grotesque beauty, its leafless branches clutching at an azure sky with gnarled, woody fingers, while its rotting bark crumbled into a medicinal-smelling humus on the ground. There was, however, one startling difference that set this dead baobab tree apart from the others. Its trunk was hollowed out, and a man crouched inside, intently peering through a small aperture with a pair of binoculars. It was an ideal hiding place, blueprinted from some long-forgotten manual on guerrilla warfare. Marcus Somala, section leader of the African Army of Revolution, was proud of his handiwork. 2 hours was all it had taken him the previous night to scoop out the spongy core of the tree and stealthily scatter the debris deep within the encircling brush. Once comfortably settled inside, he did not have to wait long for his concealment to pass its first test. Shortly after dawn, a black field worker from the farm that Somala was observing wandered by, hesitated, and then relieved himself against the baobab. Somala watched, smiling inwardly. He felt an impulse to slip the blade of his long, curved Moroccan knife out of the sight hole and slice off the worker's penis. The impulse was, to Somala, an amusing one, nothing more. He did not indulge himself with stupid actions. He was a professional soldier and a dedicated revolutionist, a seasoned veteran of nearly 100 raids. He was proud to serve in the front line of the crusade to eradicate the last vestige of the Anglo cancer from the African continent. 10 days had passed since he led his 10-man section team from their base camp in Mozambique over the border into Natal. They had moved only at night, skirting the known paths of the police security patrols and hiding in the bushveld from the helicopters of the South African Defense Force. It had been a grueling trek. The October spring in the southern hemisphere was unusually cool, and the underbrush seemed eternally clammy from constant rains. When at last they had reached the small farming township of Umkhono, Somala stationed his men according to the plan given him by his Vietnamese advisor. Each man was to scout a farm or military facility for 5 days, gathering information for future raids. Somala had assigned the Fox Farm to himself. After the field worker had ambled off to begin his day's labor, Somala refocused his binoculars and scanned the fox spread. The majority of the cleared acreage, waging a constant battle against the encroaching sea of surrounding bush and grassland, was planted in sugar cane. The remainder was mostly pasture for small herds of beef and dairy cattle, with a bit of tea and tobacco thrown in. There was also a garden plot behind the main house containing vegetables for the personal consumption of the Fox family. A stone barn was used to store the cattle feed and crop fertilizers. It stood apart from a huge shed that covered the trucks and farm equipment. A quarter of a mile beyond, situated beside a meandering stream, was a compound that housed a community of what Somala guessed to be nearly 50 workers and their families, along with their cattle and goats. The Fox House, more of an estate, actually, dominated the crest of a hill and was neatly landscaped by rows of gladiola and fire lilies edging a closely cropped lawn. The picturesque scene was spoiled by a 10-foot chain-link fence topped by several strands of barbed wire that guarded the house on all four sides. Somala studied the barrier closely. It was a stout fence. The support poles were thick and were no doubt buried deep in encased concrete. Nothing short of a tank could penetrate that mesh, he calculated. He shifted his glasses until a solidly muscled man with a repeating rifle strapped to a shoulder came into view. The guard leaned casually against a small wooden shelter that stood next to a gate. Guards could be surprised and easily disposed of, Somala mused. But it was the thin lines leading from the fence to the basement of the house that diluted his confidence. He didn't require the presence of an electrical engineer to tell him the fence was connected to a generator. He could only speculate as to the strength of the voltage that surged invisibly through the chain link. He noted also that one of the wires led into the guard shelter. That meant a switch had to be thrown by a guard whenever the gate was opened, and this was the Achilles heel of the Fox defense. Pleased at his discovery, Somala settled down inside his blind and watched and waited.